Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Imagine an America in the not-so-distant future in which Congress passes an amendment to the Constitution that grants life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness to every embryo, effectively outlawing abortion for all women across the United States. Not only that, but anyone who tries to end their pregnancy is thrown in jail, and any woman who attempts to cross the border into a neighboring country such as Canada to secure an abortion is also thrown in jail. Well, that is the story set in the new novel Red Clocks. Its author, Lainey Zumas, says that many of the laws in her fictional world have been suggested by real U.S. lawmakers, and Lainey joins me now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
I actually wonder if you could, first of all, start with a little reading from the book to sort of give us a sense into the world that you're creating in Red Clocks.
Sure. When Congress proposed the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and it was sent to the states for a vote, the biographer wrote emails to her representatives, marched in protests in Salem and Portland, donated to Planned Parenthood, but she wasn't all that worried. It had to be political theater, she thought, a flexing of muscle by the conservative-controlled House and Senate in league with a fetus-loving new president. 39 states voted to ratify, a three-quarters majority. The biographer watched the computer screen splashed with this news, thought of the signs at the rallies, "Keep your rosaries off my ovaries," "Think outside my box," and the online petitions, the celebrity op-eds. She couldn't believe the personhood amendment had become real with all these citizens so against it. Which, the disbelief, was stupid. She knew it was her job as a teacher of history to know how many horrors are legitimated in public daylight against the will of most of the people.
Hmm. That's Lainey Zumas reading from her new novel, Red Clocks. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name a little earlier. So tell me a little bit more. I mean, you began the novel in, 2010?
That's right, yeah.
And what got you started?
It came out of a lot of questions I had in my own life about motherhood, whether to become a mother. I was dealing with infertility, and my experiences with Western medicine were not very pleasant in that regard. And so I was, you know, doing research about IVF, in vitro fertilization. And that's when I came across this personhood amendment, which would effectively outlaw IVF because the embryos could not give their consent to be moved from a laboratory into someone's uterus. And the names that kept popping up in my research were Mike Pence and Paul Ryan,
mm-hmm.
And both of whom have, you know, co-sponsored personhood proposals in the past. And so almost all the laws in Red Clocks are taken from actual lawmakers, not only Pence and Ryan, but those are two of the main ones. When he was governor of Indiana, Pence wanted to oblige women who had a miscarriage or abortion to have funerals or cremation services for their fetal material.
So but I read in a different interview that you gave that when you began, you didn't necessarily have political themes in mind.
Yeah. I mean, as a writer, I think, you know, I think all literature is political. I was really focusing on characters and my own anxiety and my own kind of worries about the world. And I think those worries themselves are political because a lot of them have to do with the narratives we inherit about motherhood and who should become a mother. And I've been thinking about that so much with this awful, awful stuff going on at our southern border, the way that this particular administration is enacting its family values is horrific. And I was thinking about those so-called values a lot when I was working on this book, especially revising it after November 2016.
Yeah. So in the book, it's called Red Clocks, you interweave four stories, right, about four different women living in the same small town in Oregon. They're at different stages in their lives. Can you tell us a little bit about these four women?
Yeah, one is a 15-year-old high school sophomore who's pregnant, does not want to stay pregnant. And then her history teacher, who's 42 and happily not in a relationship, but she wants to become a mother. A woman in her late 30s who's a wife and mother of two kids, and then an herbalist who lives alone in the forest and treats people who can't afford health insurance or doctors, and she does do illegal terminations. since the new laws have passed.
How do the women see each other and each other's particular challenges and stories?
There is a fair degree of kind of silent wondering and judging, not necessarily with the herbalist character who's known as the mender. She kind of rolls her own way, but, you know, there's some envy on the behalf of the 42-year-old history teacher when she sees this girl whose brain she really loves and you know, wants to support her academically. But when she hears she's pregnant, she's jealous. And she's so upset that she's jealous about that. And so I really wanted to investigate some of those kind of unshared narratives that we have and judgments that, you know, we, you know, all human beings, but I was thinking particularly in female friendships or relationships.
Right. You know, it's understandable that right now, given, we've had a decades-long contentious political process or conversation around women and their bodies, for sure. But it seems as if there's quite a lot of sort of reproductive dystopia in literature and television as well. You know, and there was an article in The Guardian where someone was asking what happened to sort of more utopian visions of the future for reproductive rights, which also sort of meets reality in a sense that, you know, in Ireland just recently, we had the Irish people voted to change the country's constitution so that abortions could be allowed in Ireland again. So,
yes.
You know, how do you balance the two?
Yeah, that Ireland referendum was one of the few bright spots in the past many months. I think it's also a question of what fiction can do that maybe a policy proposal or a public debate cannot, which is kind of plunge a reader into the experience of these questions and not necessarily in their solutions, right? So that's what I was interested in, and not in creating a worldview that was really negative or without hope, but rather saying, okay, what happens when your body and your mind are subject to this legislation? Then what do you do? And so that kind of resilience or choice making from a place of oppression or subjugation is really interesting to me.
And I think the power of the book is that you're creating a world that's not at a far remove from our current reality. So it's not hard to imagine.
Yeah. And it's in your home state, right?
Oregon keeps coming up here on Radio Boston. Yes, you have said it, in my home state. But
It's my adopted home state. I've only lived there for 7 years.
So. Okay. I've lived in Massachusetts now for almost half my life, so I'm kind of split. I'm an East Coast, West Coast kid now. Yeah. Well, Lainey Zumas's new book is called Red Clocks, and she'll be appearing at Newtonville Books tonight and at UMass Amherst tomorrow. We've got information about those events at radioboston.org. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Magna.